Well, it was a first in my life. I was a student. I had started the Christian life literally just a few weeks before, and I'd been brought along to a church, and at the end of the service, the vicar stopped me on the way out and invited me to tea with him. Tea with a vicar. I had no idea what happened at tea with a vicar. I'd never been to tea with a vicar before. Didn't know what you did at tea with a vicar before, but you know, he was an oldish guy, about as young as I am now. He seemed friendly and harmless, so I said yes. And in naive innocence, I rolled along to discover I was the only one having tea with the vicar. The tea was, you know, perfectly tasty enough. There's a decent biscuit. The sort of social chit-chat bit I could handle okay at the beginning. He asked me something about my own Christian beginnings, and I told him as best I could articulate. That was all right. And then suddenly, from left field, he said to me, "And Hugh, are you telling your friends about Jesus yet?" Shock, horror. I mean, I hardly knew anything about discipleship. The idea that discipleship meant you were an ambassador too, that never occurred to me. It has, of course, occurred to the London Diocese. Their Capital Vision 2020 aims to commission 100,000 ambassadors for Jesus in daily life across the city by 2020. Well, that's ambitious, isn't it? But it's the sort of vision that explains why London Diocese is growing, even though this week saw yet another set of disappointing statistics for the Church of England as a whole. Here's what you'll read they say about whole idea. The most powerful thing we can do for London, don't you like that? The most powerful thing we can do for London is equip 70 to 100,000 for their everyday lives. What a vision. 100,000 ambassadors scattered all around London. Well, that's what we're tapping into for this series. That's what we're wanting to be part of as a church. That's where the Bible takes Christ's disciples. And today, here are three basic starter questions to ask about this idea of being ambassadors for Christ. The first of them is simply this, you know, who are ambassadors for Christ? Who are the we in this verse when it says we are Christ's ambassadors? I mean, in the first instance, obviously it's Paul and Timothy because they were writing this letter. They're writing to a young Christian community, drifting in their faith, drifting away from the apostle Paul who'd founded the church in the first place. So he and Timothy write as ambassadors for Christ, trying to restore relationships, to bring reconciliation. But is the label just for the apostolic band? I mean, what about evangelists and enthusiasts? Because certainly many of them have picked up the label and applied it to themselves, and to be honest, sometimes thrust it on others, whether they liked it or not. Well, the more I look at this passage, though, the more convinced I am that we can't leave this idea of ambassadors just to Rico Tice and his friends. Actually, it's not strictly speaking evangelism that's going on here. Paul is calling Christians to repent and be reconciled to God and to the apostle. He's writing to people he describes as the church of God in Corinth, brothers and sisters in Christ. Because there's more to this idea of ambassadors for Christ than we might think. And it includes more of us. Yeah, there's a more universal feel to what's being said here than limiting it to a particular group will ever communicate. I think we have to face the idea that it's really all of us. The Christian life brings radical change to how we view one another. I don't know if you spotted that back in verse 16. You see, from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. We've got another way of looking at people. This Christian life transforms any life. Verse 17, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. And all this change, according to verse 18, is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ. That Christian life and discipleship is at the heart of being given the ministry of reconciliation in verse 18, the message of reconciliation in verse 19. It's what makes someone, verse 20, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors. Now, no doubt the apostles are more extensively and more publicly than many others, but not exclusively. Any disciple shares the privilege. I've got to understand, of course, that the ambassador in the first century world was rather different from many ambassadors today. Today, the ambassador moves to a new country. They'll reside there. They may have some imposing embassy to enjoy. They become a permanent representative in that country of their country. It's a far more developed role than it was in the first century. Then an ambassador was someone sent with a message. He, she delivered it and returned to be sent out again. See, are you reconciled to God? Do you have the message of Jesus? Well then, we are ambassadors for Christ. Who are the ambassadors? Well, that's who they are. Those reconciled to God, those with the message of Jesus. Who are ambassadors? Here's a second question. Where are we ambassadors? Because we're used, aren't we, someone being an ambassador to know where they're an ambassador to. You're the ambassador to France, are you? Or to the United States, or to China, or to Kenya. We wonder what our posting is. I think it's one of the reasons we narrow it down sometimes, because we imagine that people with a title, you know, apostle, evangelist, rector, well, they can qualify as ambassadors, but we can't quite see where our posting is. So look again at verse 20. We are ambassadors for Christ. So wherever we are is where we're posted. I mean, that's where we're to take the message. God's people are to be a missional people. Whether it's Jesus saying, going, make disciples of all nations, or Peter writing, live such good lives among the pagans, that God expects his people to be out there as ambassadors. So please don't imagine that the front line is in here. You know, at a Christianity Explored table, or leading a fellowship group, or a springboard, or a student group, doing something up front on a Sunday. They all have a vital role, but it is to prepare us to be ambassadors out there. As you head off to work tomorrow, I know, whatever it is you do as a doctor, or a banker, or a cleaner, or a teacher, as you put on your work clothes, do you think to yourself, I'm an ambassador for Christ too? As you go through the doors at work, run through the day ahead in your mind, do you take a deep breath and remind yourself, I'm going in as an ambassador for Christ? Or maybe it's when you get home and face the responsibilities of parenting, do you step into those as an ambassador for Christ? It's vital we do. The love of the parent and the love of God are tightly woven together in the experience of the child. So at the start of, the end of, a long day with the kids, what a perspective changer. I'm an ambassador for Christ. And when you feel worthless compared with some high-flying achiever friend, remember, you're not just a stay-at-home mum, but an ambassador for Christ. Or as you go out for an evening with friends, colleagues, as you head for the meal, the drink, the show, do you go as an ambassador for Christ? Or are you just off duty, ready to go with the flow and enjoy yourself? I was having lunch with Mark Green a little while back. Mark heads up the London Institute for Contemporary Christianity. And we were talking about the way people compartmentalize their Christian lives, you know, into sort of Sundays and church events. I said to him, surely churches have really understood the dangers of the secular sacred divide by now, haven't they, Mark? And he looked at me and he said, well, ministers think they understand it, Hugh, and think they're teaching the dangers of it, but the congregations aren't hearing it, in my experience. I said rather defensively, how come? Well, he said, whatever they say in their teaching, you know, the notices, the appeals, the energies all focus on the church and church events and church groups there. It leads people to think that that's what really matters. And the penny began to drop with me. We were talking about it as a ministry team together, and it just shows the different personalities. One asked the slightly theological question, why does God leave us in the world once we've come to Christ? And another flippantly quipped, because he needs table leaders. But you see, ambassadors for Christ are posted wherever we find ourselves. And let me say this, you are doing it remarkably well. Because another answer to the where question is this one. It's got to do with the culture we find ourselves in. Now, a recent survey, a major survey, with a sample poll far stronger than most of the political opinion polls you read about in the newspapers, it shows the remarkable penetration we still have of our culture. People were asked if they knew personally a Christian. Here was the answer they came up with. 67% said they knew a Christian. 27% said they didn't, and 6% didn't know. I don't know whether that was they didn't know what a Christian was, they didn't know whether their friend was. But anyway, look, virtually 70% market penetration, as those kind of people like to speak about, is a striking figure. You'd give your right arm for that. We're not as out of touch as we sometimes imagine. And it's you, by the way, not us, who are in contact with people. Only 1% of the Christians people knew are church leaders. The effective ambassadors for Christ will be you, not us on the staff team. And you are effective. Because according to the survey, more than half of non-Christians who know a practicing Christian have had a conversation with them about Jesus. And even more strikingly, when asked about the Christian they knew, guess what? They like you. They like you. Here's what they thought about you. See, 65% thought the Christian they knew was friendly. 51% thought they were caring. 46% thought you were good-humored. 38% generous. Actually, there's a big thing. Just hold in mind those percentages. 65, 51, 46, 38. Because I'll show you the percentages for the negative thoughts they had about you. It's very striking. 13%. It's the highest. 13% narrow-minded, 10% hypocritical, 8% uptight, 7% homophobic. They like you. Whatever it is you're doing, keep at it. They may not tell you, but it's effective. See, where are we posted as ambassadors for Christ? Well, into this kind of a culture, but actually, here's a tension we've got to live with. I found myself chatting the other day with Steve Clifford, who heads up the Evangelical Alliance, one of the major sponsors of that survey, and with Peter Brierley, who is probably the leading Christian researcher in the country, has been for quite a while. And as we were chatting, and particularly chatting about that last set of responses as to how people view the Christians they knew, they said this, if the question we'd asked had not been the one it was what? How do you think of the Christian you know personally? They said, if instead we'd asked the more general question, how do you think of Christians? They were both convinced we'd have got a very different answer. You could probably have reversed the percentages. And we've got to speak into that world too. You know, a media world that, whether it's the television or the papers, portrays Christians very, very differently from how they portrayed the Christians they knew. We're called to be ambassadors for Christ into a world that may like us personally, but has an increasingly poor view of Christians in general. Where am I posted? Out there. Into that world. Can't avoid it. Wherever my work or life takes me, when I go to work, I'm going to the mission field. Who are ambassadors? We're ambassadors for Christ. Where am I posted? Wherever you are, we are ambassadors for Christ. Last basic question, how? How do we do it? How do we represent Christ? How are we ambassadors for Christ? What does it look like? Well, here are features the diocesan scheme are looking for, and they're great starting points. They're looking for someone who will pray. Ambassadors will be those who will pray for the friends, family, colleagues around them. And after all, who else will pray for them? Nearly every survey I know of tells you that behind nearly every convert, there is a praying Christian somewhere. Parent, godparent, grandparent, friend, an ambassador for Christ somewhere praying for them. I've never forgotten when I went up to university, as I say, not a Christian myself, playing for the rugby team. Rugby club dinner comes along. Rugby club dinners in those days were as seedy as almost certainly they still are today. Certainly not the kind of occasions that were likely to leave you more godly at the end of them. I went along to enjoy it, and I discovered afterwards that the friend who would lead me to Christ and his girlfriend had been praying for me that night that I'd be protected from some of the worst excesses I could have got into. I've never forgotten that. I mean, do you pray like that for your friends and colleagues? I just saw on the resource center downstairs, they've got a new series of little books called Five Things to Pray. Five Things to Pray for the People You Love. They look great, Five Things to Pray for Your Church. Check them out downstairs afterwards. But an ambassador's a praying person. They're looking for ambassadors to grow. Here's what guards our integrity, that ambassadors for Christ are committed to growing as disciples. That is to say, to living what we are commending. To following Jesus as Lord, not just to telling others to do so. Ambassadors for Christ say, come with us on the journey. Or, here's another thing, that people who will connect. It's really what we've already been talking about, connecting with those we work around and live around. But there's an intentionality here, isn't there? It's not just having a colleague, but connecting with them, ready to represent Christ to them. It's not just hanging out with friends, but living as an ambassador for Christ around them. And then, fourthly, pray, grow, connect. Ambassadors will live as salt and light wherever we are. And we'll be exploring what that looks like throughout this series, but today let me just leave you with three examples. Here's the first one from the workplace. A particular workplace, admittedly. James Carey is a scriptwriter. He writes comedy scripts for a living, and he's written for programs like Miranda. I've met him once. He is a clear, convinced Christian man. He was asked, how do your beliefs impact what you write? And he said this, in every way. But of course, the characters that I write about hardly ever share my beliefs, just as Jesus told stories about fools and greedy farmers and dishonest stewards and the like. But the reason I write sitcoms is because they're true to life, in that we make the same mistakes week after week. And that they show that actions matter. They have an impact on others. The sitcom is a strongly moral genre in which the proud are humbled, the liar is exposed, the greedy are disappointed. sitcoms are more Christian than people realize. He's thought through his work, hasn't he? When he puts pen to paper, no, he's more modern than that. When he types on his laptop, there's a subversive ambassador at work. That's the workplace. Second story is from the school gate. Granny's been doing the school run. And she hasn't just dropped the grandchildren off. She's invested time getting to know other mums in the playground there, in that sort of hanging around time you have. She's got to know a couple in particular. They're different nationalities. She's befriended them. She invited them to a Christmas gospel opportunity. And now these two mums are about to start looking at a gospel with the uncover material together. Granny's being an ambassador for Christ. The workplace, the school gate, the student campus. Have you thought of telling your friends about Jesus yet? I take another sip of the vicar's tea. I'm trying to keep the look of shock horror off my face. Well, yes, I have, I said, but I've heard the people who just sort of shoot their mouths off, and whenever a question comes back, they don't have a clue about the answer, and it really doesn't do any good to the cause, whatever it is. So I've been thinking that I'll really get hold of the answers first, and then I'll talk to my friends. I'm secretly pleased with that. I'm quite impressed, really, considering it was the answer to a question that a nanosecond before had never even occurred to me. And the vicar smiles reassuringly. And I just will later on discover that that smile was genuinely warm, but never naive. Well, he says, Hugh, you could always say, I don't know. I've just started with Jesus. I'll find out, but all I can say is that I found Jesus a help for myself. See, I discovered at tea with the vicar that you could be an ambassador for Christ and not know all the answers. In fact, it's the only way to start being an ambassador for Christ. Strangely enough, it's the only way ever to be an ambassador for Christ. I don't need to know all the answers. 100,000 ambassadors for Christ scattered across London to go out each day, and it may be for us that each day was going to be a lonely, hostile walk, but knowing that hundreds and thousands of others are stepping out in partnership with us each morning, because partnership is not just for Sundays, and partnership is not just for church. On February the 14th, we're going to turn all our services into commissioning services for Ambassadors for Christ. We've got the Bishop of London coming to our morning services. And my hope and prayer is that we'll have 1,000+ willing to be commissioned as Ambassadors for Christ then. Will you be part of it? Part of that great movement? Yes. Will you live on the front line? Well, you will live on the front line. You are the front line. Will we get up each day and look at verse 20? Be able to say, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were making his appeal through us. What a remarkable thought. What an extraordinary privilege. God's mission plan to reach the world, well, let's start with London, is to work through ambassadors for Christ. Don't miss out. We're going to take a moment of silence. Moment to reflect as God calls us to this ambassador role.